Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I am your host today with Women Who Lead Radio, and with me, I'm so delighted to have our leading lady today, as our topic is, and I love this one because I think we're going to have an interesting conversation, is navigate glass ceilings and glass cliffs, apply for corporate board service. So there is a lot of conversation there. So I would love to introduce you to our leading lady, who is Adis Vila, and she is the NACD Board Leadership Fellow. But let me tell you a little bit about her, just as some highlights. She has held tons of C-level positions in business and government and higher education sectors. She's going to talk to us about board service for women. And what I loved most is that her credentials, she was the first Chief Diversity Officer at the U.S. Air Force Academy. So, Ms. Adis, will you please say hello to all of our listeners and welcome.
Well, hello, everyone, and hello, Michelle. Thank you so much for having me in your very successful show.
Oh, thank you, Adis. And listen, I'm delighted to have you, because I'll tell you what, you know, what I find in the Women's Association and some of the women I come across on a regular basis, you know, women want to serve on boards. It's like they're looking to be able to give back. But I think so many women really don't know about corporate board service. And I know you're very involved with your title as the, you know, NACD with the National Association for Corporate Directors. But, you know, one of the first things I want to start with my big question for you, because of the title of our show, is, okay, what's the difference between, at least in your mind, between glass ceiling and glass cliff? Because that got my attention.
Yes. Well, you know, the glass ceiling is that phenomenon that keeps women and people of color from reaching their highest potential. So if you look historically at how women and people of color have risen through corporate America, they get to a certain position, and then you start looking at the demographics of that company, and you no longer see women or people of color. And yes, while there has been improvement in the recent past, the numbers are still, in my humble opinion, rather abysmal. And so you find that many women and many people of color have risen to positions as CFOs or general counsels, or information technology officers, because those positions are very much merit-based. But when you look at CEOs, for example, women and people of color are very few and far between, unless, of course, the man of color, the women of color, or the white woman begins and establishes her own business. And so the glass ceiling is that phenomenon that says, you know, women and people of color can only get so far in an organization before they find this ceiling that they cannot break through. And that ceiling, by the way, is also evident in the university sector, where fewer women are presidents of, for example, four-year institutions. They're more likely to be presidents of community colleges if they happen to be Latinas or African-American. Or it's also present in government. You notice when President Trump appointed his cabinet, few women. Even President Obama, who said he was going to have equal numbers of women and people of color in his cabinet, that didn't happen. So that is the ceiling, that there are still positions that are not available to people of color and to women in spite of their credentials.
Well, and you know, I mean, we're both women, so I think we can go here and go there. It's like, I'm really curious from your perspective, because that's one of the first things I do when I look at an organization now, is I will look at their board, and it's like, I will see, you know, I look and see, okay, how many women, it's like, are they diverse? In many factors now, right? There's so many, I mean, age, it's like cultural backgrounds, obviously gender and those different things. But, you know, your journey, it's like, how did you get to be, you know, where you are? I mean, with the Army, or excuse me, the Air Force Academy, and then also your, we'll talk more about your process to board leadership as a board leadership fellow, but what, you know, for you, it's like, what are some of the things that you feel, Avis, you've done to get to the level that you've been at? You know, can you share that with some of our listeners of kind of your keys to, this is what you need to do, ladies, because I'm sure our listeners will kind of eat that up.
Yes, well, you know, one of the most important things, particularly for people of color, is that early on we seek the absolute best education we can. And that means trying to get our children or our grandchildren into the liberal arts schools, you know, or the Ivy League schools, or those fantastic internships that perhaps we did not have an opportunity to do while we were growing up, or to take those trips abroad and learn those foreign languages. All of those are required preparation for the world in which these young people are going to lead, a world that requires people that can deal with ambiguity, that are easily adaptable, that are multilingual and multicultural, and can communicate across differences amongst the people that they're likely to lead. Because you're absolutely correct. The demographics are changing in such a way
right.
that the fastest growing population in the United States is the Hispanic population. And the Asian population, although small at this time, is also growing very, very fast. And so what we need to encourage middle managers and senior executives today is to ensure that women and people of color have every opportunity to reach the highest positions within their organizations. And you are very smart as a woman leader and as a shareholder of companies to look at their board, to look at their executive leadership team and say, gee, where is the diversity here? And again, diversity can be very diverse. I mean, the word is obvious. But what often happens is that organizations will bring in that diversity, whether of gender or sexual orientation or ethnicity, but then the organizational culture is not inclusive, and those folks choose to go elsewhere. In fact, and I'm sure you've had speakers on this topic on prior shows, the group that is starting more and more businesses today are African-American women. Oftentimes,
oh, I don't know that statistic. That's wow.
Yeah.
That's bad. Wow.
And I think Latinos are not far behind. And the reason is that they have the preparation, they have the skills, they have the drive. And when they see that this glass ceiling is keeping them from being everything they can be, they say, well, you know what, I'm going to start my own organization. And oftentimes they are very, very successful when they do so.
Right. You know, something else, Adis, that I see a lot of, and again, this is just pure interaction with women, and, you know, we interview a lot of corporate, you know, VPs, high-level leaders. And one of the things that's always interesting to me is women will say, you know, I don't know what the process is like to serve on a board. I don't, you know, they think, well, I need to go volunteer. And yet board service from, let's say, corporate boards, that's really what I want to spend time on, is so many women don't know that there is, I mean, you've got to politic for that. You've got to meet the right people. You've got to think of it as a process, not just a, you know, you're asked to serve on a board. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that process of what it's
sure,
like,
yes.
you know, to be serving
absolutely.
on a corporate board?
I think the first thing a woman who wants to serve on a board needs to ask herself is why. Why do you want to do this? I want to do it because I am very strategic in my orientation, and I really believe that I can make a contribution because I can think far ahead, and I can think across the globe because of my global experiences, and I think that I would bring those assets to a board. Then the next thing I think one should do is, what kind of a board? Do I want to join a family-owned, or do I want to join a small where it's much more hands-on, or do I want the prestige of a PepsiCo or Coca-Cola? Do I want a huge board? And then the third thing one has to say, how do I prepare myself? And that's where I decided that I wanted to be beyond reproach. I didn't want someone to say, we're bringing Adis in because she's a woman and a Latina. I wanted them to say, we want to bring Adis in because she will contribute, because she has knowledge of governance, because she understands mergers and acquisitions and logistics and marketing and branding and so on and so forth. And she can read
from. And because she's awesome. And because she's awesome as well. Adis is awesome. You need to say that as part of your mantra.
There you go. But it's better when other people say it about you. So
yeah,
you prepare
exactly.
yourself. And the road that I took was the National Association of Corporate Directors, and I became an individual member, and I looked into the opportunities to reach the highest designation that they have on governance. And that is how I came to the leadership fellow that you named when you introduced me. I would encourage folks to go to the website, www.nacdonline.com, and see for themselves where they might fit in and how they might proceed with their own governance education if they are interested in joining a board. And then once you have done for yourself the preparation, then I think the most important thing is to gain visibility. One of the reasons that I'm so pleased to be doing this show is that you have awesome listeners. And I am hopeful that among your listeners
yes,
are people who can say, you know what, hey, Ada seems qualified. Let me talk to her some more. Let me reach out to her on LinkedIn. Let me see if we can do something together where I might see her in action and then recommend
right.
her to be considered for a position. Getting on a corporate board, like so many things in life, is not so much about who you know. It is about who knows you. And so you have to network, network, network. That includes speaking. You know, I do lectures all around the country at universities, at corporations, at national organizations. I write. I publish articles. I do radio shows with you. So anything that can gain me visibility or any of the listeners visibility is time well spent. And then there are wonderful organizations that you can join. Besides the NACD, I'm active in Women Corporate Directors and in Latino Corporate Directors. And I would encourage others who want to follow this path to take a look at these organizations and decide for themselves.
Well, and Ada, just a little history and background. I mean, what was your corporate or business background? I mean, because obviously it's like, you know, there's money to be made by serving on a corporate board, right? But you're still,
yes.
you had, you know, you've got credentials. What was your business background? Can you share with our listeners?
Sure. I divided my career into three different legs, if you will, like a three-legged stool. I started out as a lawyer, practicing both in Mexico and Switzerland and in Miami. My area of concentration
oh my gosh.
Is international
Those are three,
law.
Wait, stop for just 1 second. I'm like laughing going, wait, Mexico? What did you say? You said Switzerland? Where
yes,
else?
Yes, I worked for Nestle's, the chocolate company.
Wow,
at their
those
world
are so diverse. Totally different
yes.
areas, yeah.
In Vevey, Switzerland, and I worked with a law firm in Mexico City.
Oh my gosh.
I did both of those after programs. This is what I was saying about making sure that early in our careers we take advantage of global programs. I did my graduate
mm-hmm.
degree in international law in Switzerland, and then after I completed my degree, I worked for Nestle's in their legal department. I also did a summer course at the Escuela Libre de Derecho in Mexico City and worked with a law firm in Mexico. And then I worked with firms in Orlando and in Miami before I left the actual law practice and was very fortunate to be selected to be a White House fellow, which then started my government career. And I was in government for 10 years, and I did both policy jobs and management jobs, reaching both the agency head of the Department of Management at the Department of Administration in the state of Florida and the Assistant Secretary for Administration at the Department of Agriculture at the federal level. So it's important that if you're going to be in, you know, aspiring to serve on a corporate board, that you understand all the sectors that affect how we work in the United States. And that includes the government sector, the not-for-profit sector, and, of course, the for-profit sector, which is, you know, companies, whether family-owned, public, or private.
And, you know, Adis, I'm curious because, you know, we've had, I mean, we were talking earlier before the show started about, you know, we love Betsy Berkemer, right, the board game.
Yes.
We'll give her a plug while we're on our show because she's fabulous. I'm curious if you think, you know, do you think it's really important for someone to be part of NACD and go through that process of how to serve on a board and be educated on governance and all of that? Because I've known women who have served on boards that have not gone through that. And, I don't know the feedback whether, you know, one is valuable or a must-have, but what's your opinion on somebody, you know, kind of going through that process to kind of learn before they serve, so to speak?
Well, you're absolutely right that there are some people, men and women, that you wonder how they ever got invited to serve on a board because they don't have the qualifications. But, you know, if you are a Rockefeller, you have opportunities that are different than if you are a woman or a person of color. And so you have to decide for yourself. If your personal contacts are such that you can call 100 CEOs because your family has have owned shares in all of those companies, then chances are you have very little governance education to do. But that's not the case of most of your listeners, I would imagine. I would imagine most want to know that they're being invited to serve on a board because they are going to bring value to the board. And more, you know, activist shareholders are looking very carefully at who is being asked to serve on boards. And they're looking for people that bring value because it has been shown time after time that a diverse board increases the profitability of a firm.
Right, we've heard that, yeah.
You know, it's obvious because different ideas, different ways of looking at problems, different suggestions on how to handle those controversial issues that plague the corporate sector just like they plague the not-for-profit or the government sector. And so you
right.
want, as you come into a board, you want to know that you are as qualified as your peer to the left and your peer to the right, and that you will bring value. And so there are many ways of doing it. There's self-study. There's, of course, the road that I took through NACD. There are other organizations like Harvard and Stanford and UCLA. I've done courses at both Harvard and UCLA on governance that, you know, give people certificates and so on and so forth. There are also groups that focus on women's corporate governance education, like women
right.
corporate directors and so forth. And so every person has to decide for himself or herself what works best for them. But I would never.
I do, but
think,
you know, Avis, one question I've got. I got to interject. Our show's, you know, we've got a couple of minutes here that I wanted to kind of interject. That so many women don't even know that, you know, there's benefits to serving on a board. I mean, I know you kind of were strategic in what you shared, but you know, so many women will say, "I don't have time." But can you share what are the biggest benefits to serving on a board? And you do on a corporate board, you know, many times you're paid, correct? And
yes,
you know,
of course.
Explain
and of course,
some of
the bigger
to our
boards,
listeners,
you know,
on that.
The biggest boards pay the most, but even smaller
right.
boards pay. And of course, you want to be paid for your time because you're bringing your time and your expertise. But the reason that you should want, in my opinion, to serve on a corporate board is because you want to improve how that firm works, how they become much more successful, because you're going to own shares. You know, most corporations require their board members to buy shares of the company. And in most of them, you are paid in part cash, but in part in equity. And so you want the company to do well. And so you want to bring your years of expertise to ensure that the firm continues to do well. And you're going to be compensated not just for your directorship, if you will, but also because the shares that you will have purchased in that company are also improving in their cost or in their value.
And
sorry.
Yeah, and I'm curious in your opinion, because, you know, you've gone down this lane. It's like, what, in your opinion or from your perspective, do you think is the reason, you know, more women don't kind of go through the process? Because I've even been to some of the corporate directors' forum meetings out here in Southern California, and what is always interesting to me is that probably, I'd say 90% of the room is all men, you know, that are in attendance. And, you know, again, they're diverse on their board, but when you look at the events and things going on, it still is very heavy male dominated. And, you know, what is your take on why more women kind of, is it just the message isn't getting out? Do women not know about the process? You know, and I'm going to kind of allude to what I hear a lot of women say is, I don't have time for that with my career and to serve on a board. So curious what your perspective is on why more women don't go to serve on board.
I think there are at least four reasons that women give for not joining a board. One, of course, is
mm-hmm.
that I don't have time. I'm focused on my career. And that leads us nicely
yeah.
into the glass cliff, which I'll be happy to talk in a minute. But also liability. You know, as a lawyer, I can tell you that directors have a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders. And there are lots of people,
mm-hmm.
in spite of insurance that you can buy and that the company will buy for you, that say, you know, that's too risky for me. A third reason is, you know what, I don't like the other people on the board. I don't like how they look at things. I'm much, more socially responsible investor. I don't really want to spend my time doing that type of work. If I'm going to give up my time, I'd rather do it with Boys and Girls Clubs or the Cancer Society because I care about those causes, and I want to make sure those organizations have the benefit of my expertise. And that's a worthy excuse.
Mm.
And then fourth is the process is very challenging. As hard as I have worked on this, Michelle, I have yet to land on a paid board. And I do, and I have wanted to do this. Now, I could not do it while I was in government because you are not allowed to serve on a corporate board. But since I retired,
right.
I have, you know, taken on this journey, and I have found it very difficult to get appointed to a board. I am hopeful that in 2017 that this will happen. But many boards are looking for CEOs, and that's a challenge because many women and people of color are well-established and successful, but they may not be a CEO or a former CEO. Or in my case, having been the CEO of a government agency with a $750 million budget and 500 employees is often not looked upon as being a real CEO job because it's in the government. And so there is,
right.
like everything else in life, lots of competition. The people that are on boards are not anxious to retire or retire from those board seats. They want to stay on. Many companies have moved the retirement age up to 72 or 75, meaning that in any given year, there may only be 300 to 500 open positions in board governance. And so men and women are competing for those very few slots. So, yeah, I think all four reasons are affecting, you know, why fewer women actually go looking for board seats.
And so I'm curious, Adis, with your process and your approach. So I know you got your fellow, right, status with NACD, with
yes.
your board leadership fellow. It's like, what are you doing right now? Because I, you know, again, we're talking about how to serve on board. So you've been on nonprofit boards, I'm assuming?
Yes, for more than 30 years, I have served
yeah,
on
okay.
boards
and
of
so what,
Boys and Girls Clubs. And,
right.
You know,
what are you doing right now to be able to go and, you know, kind of like be strategic about serving on a board? Are you interacting within NACD? Is that kind of the prime place where you're meeting different corporate directors and getting kind of like in that circle? Or is
yes.
there another kind of couple of strategies you're sharing that our listeners
might be
interested to hear?
Yes, I do five different things. I follow the
mm-hmm.
NACD closely. I attend their sessions both locally here in Florida as well as the global summit in Washington, D.C. area. And I reach out to people who are also members and already more experienced directors and introduce myself. So I do that. I have joined, like I mentioned to you, the Latino Corporate Directors and the Women Corporate Directors Associations, because there, again, I get to rub elbows with experienced directors and learn from them and gain that visibility that I believe
right.
is highly sought after. The third thing that I do is I write and I give lectures so that people know that I know of what I speak. And I'm hopeful that that is coming across to your radio audience. So I do that to gain visibility and to further network with those who may be in a position to help me. I keep an eye out. You know, I read the press. I am interested in industries that are highly regulated, whether they be banks, financial institutions, aviation, technology, telecommunications, fertilizers, chemicals. So I read about companies in these fields so that I can be aware of opportunities that I might be able to, you know, learn about. And that's very, very important.
And this is something I guess I don't know about. It's like when you are out, you know, actively looking to serve on a board, is it that, you know, just by dumb luck you meet the right person and they invite you to be on the board? Or do you apply to serve on boards? Or what kind of are you finding as the process to serving on a corporate board seat? And I love the focus that you talked about of where you're looking to serve on a board, but what is that like? Do they just let you know via like letter, like you apply for a job and they say thank you, but
no
thank you, or what's it like?
I wish it were as easy as applying for a job. No, actually, it's very challenging in that regard, because first you have to learn that an organization is looking for a member, a new member of the board. And then you have mm-hmm. to learn, glean from what you may be able to read, what kinds of skills do they need on their board. Because, you know, more and more, because of activists and so forth, corporations are wanting to make sure that they have some type of a matrix of skills that are required to bring their business forward, and that their board members as a whole have those skills. So it may be that they're looking for, let's say, somebody with global experience. Well, then I think I would be a competitive candidate. But let's say they were looking for someone who was an expert in healthcare. Well, then that would not be me. And so you have to do a lot of self-reflection, and you have to be very honest with yourself. What skills do you bring that company A, B, and C may be needing on their board, and how can I let others know, perhaps on the board already, perhaps the chair of the nominating committee, perhaps the CEO, that I bring those. It's important that if you're interested, that the major search firms who recruit directors know that you are in the market, that know of your the caliber of professional that you are, that they have a copy of your resume. And so part of what I did shortly after I earned my NACD credential is I reached out to the search firms, the Spencer Stewarts, the Egon Zehnder, the Diversified Search, Korn Ferry, the major firms, and let them know that I was now able to serve, that I was no longer in government, and including a copy of my resume. So it's what I called a multi-prong journey.
It sounds daunting, and we've only got 1 minute left, and I want to know if any of our listeners, are looking to reach you, Adis, how would you like them to connect with you? I know you said LinkedIn.
If they would reach
out
on LinkedIn, that would be the easiest. My profile is under Adis Vila, and they can go to www.linkedin.com/IN/AdisVila, AdisVila.
I love it. Thank you for that. And, one final question. I mean, other than you've been fabulous and you're wonderful, and I'm wishing you good luck with serving on a board, to our listeners, what would be the top three things that you would share briefly that would be their first three steps if they're thinking that, I'm kind of interested here. It's like, I'd like to serve on a board. What would be the top three things you would say? Go do this, go do this, and do this. And we're going to have to, unfortunately, end the show after that. But what are your top three, Madhir?
I would say the first thing is reflect on your own values, because you want to be interested in firms that have values that you share. If the organizational culture and the values of the corporation are not yours, then you should be looking elsewhere. So that's number one. Number two, be analytical with yourself. Figure out what you really do bring. Not a list of 100 things. 3-4 things, 5 things that you think you would contribute to the board, whether it's your global experience, whether it's the fact that you're a CPA, whether it's that you have experience in mergers and acquisitions, whatever it is, the sort of 3 or 5.
Right.
And then identify the industries that you think you may have an interest in, and identify people in those industries with whom you can have a conversation, not necessarily about joining their board, but just about what are they looking for in board members. And then I would say get yourself a credential, so that you can begin to think about governance as a discipline. It's a continuous learning experience. Even after you get your credential, you must continue to take courses and to stay on top, because governance depends greatly on rules and laws and regulations, and so you want to be at the top of your game. And then let people know. If no one knows that you have an interest in serving, well, they'll never think of you. So gain visibility, let people know of your expertise, and help others who reach out to you, because, what goes around comes around.
Oh, that's a great way to end that. And I have to say, Adis, I can't imagine that you don't get some calls on boards, because I think you would be phenomenal and fabulous. And obviously, it's like you've got it. You pack a punch, girl. So thank you for being our leading lady today. You've been awesome.
Thank you, Michelle. I'd like to come back.
Oh,
I'd like to come back and talk about the glass cliff. We didn't get to that.
You know, it's so short, isn't it? But we will. We will do that. Aidas, thanks for your time and for being on our show on a Friday afternoon. To our listeners, I want to thank you for your loyalty and listening into Women Lead Radio. For those of you that don't know, we're here every morning on Mondays at 9 a.m., and we're here Fridays at 2 p.m. with another Women Lead Radio show. For Monday's show, I'm really excited to say, you know, we're talking about board service today, but on Monday's show, our topic is other people's money, where to find it. And we are interviewing Rita Alcala, who's the VP of Business Development from Capital Solutions Bank Corp. So anyway, have a great weekend. We will see you on the next show. And as I always like to say, please, 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 if you have a moment, if you've gotten to where you are, take a moment and support another woman.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.